Even with the miracle of modern travel, it takes days for me to reach the edge of the Nullarbor Plain. 3 or 4 flights, a quick shower in Perth, then a night or two backtracking east in a rented truck. The 2-lane carriageway stretches endlessly through the ghost towns of Australia's old gold fields. Eventually, I turn onto dirt roads, onto red rock. When I stop the truck and climb down from the cab, everything is still. Finally, I've arrived at the place where the desert cracks open. I come here every couple of years to the ancient terrain of the Ilgarn Craton, some of our world's oldest rocks. Dotted throughout the dark ochre expanse are oval ponds that are as corrosive as battery acid. Yet in these sulfuric waters, against all odds, is the most astonishing array of life. I come to investigate how primitive microbes survive the harsh conditions, how they harvest energy, and what traces they leave behind in the minerals. I come because I'm a planetary scientist, and because this is one of the most similar places on Earth to the ancient surface of Mars. I come to the Ilgarn and other wild wastelands, like the McMurdo Dry Valleys in Antarctica, like the Atacama in Chile, to hone my skills at finding life. Out in the desert, I rise with the dawn. At the end of my work days, after I load up my instruments, I climb up on one of the dusty cabs, exhausted. It's a peculiar band I've joined, this pack of Mars scientists, fiercely bound across the generations by the enigma of a neighboring world. One might fairly wonder why we have pinned our hopes for finding life to this red planet. For the last couple of billion years, there has been no rain there. There are no rivers, no lakes, no oceans. Without the driving force of fluid erosion, scars left over millions of years by meteorites are strewn across the surface. Mars has no plate tectonics, no magnetic field, and little protective atmosphere. The terrain is quiet, exposed, and bewilderingly empty. Yet long ago, before it rusted over, Mars was much more like Earth. Smaller, but similar in size and elemental composition. In its early days, Mars was black with igneous rock. Untold piles of lava built the planet's massive volcanic provinces, which bulged with enough basalt to flax the crust. The planet's swollen side cracked open as Mars cooled, and a fissure so deep that the Grand Canyon could disappear into a side channel. One of the largest mountains in the solar system was formed, towering over an escarpment that itself is as nearly as tall as Everest. I'm fond of opening my review with the words, "The title says it all," and then go on to talk about the book. Yes, I'm going to do that again today. But be forewarned, today's title only hints at the wonders you'll find in these pages. That title, Sirens of Mars, Searching for Life on Another World. Sirens, the first word of today's title. They're as old as recorded human writing, it would seem, featuring most memorably in the story of Odysseus, lost at sea with his crew. Odysseus has himself lashed to his ship, lest he be led to destroy all aboard at the beck and call of the temptresses known as the Sirens. The women and men from around the world, pretty much from around time, who are featured in today's book, are not tempted to personal or even professional destruction by the red planet, so far above us on Starry Nights, but the pull of that small red dot on our collective and individual imaginations is strong. And finally, it's bringing us not to destruction, but to a zenith of scientific prowess few would have predicted or dreamed of before the 1940s rocketry revolution. In these pages, we launch our journey to the Red Planet with a trip into the forbidding outback of Australia, where Johnson allows us to hitch a ride with her as she explores the outposts of life on Earth. Heard that in an introduction. We then circle back to pick up the story of the Red Planet that so captivated the public, and at least a few scientists who fed that wonder, beginning especially in the later 1800s. Johnson holds us on the edge of our seats as she rolls through the dramatic photographs that were beamed back to Earth from early American probes. The Russian probes, though numerous, rarely made it to Mars. Those early mariners began what became a steady stream of human-made satellites that flew by and are now landing on the Martian surface whenever the Red Planet is close enough to Earth with its cycling around the sun to make such journeys practical. As years went by, as flights went by, and spacecraft aimed their lenses and probes Marsward, leaning to circle in orbit around our neighboring planet, the very first spacecrafts, to those of today, told a quite different story of the planet most near us in the universe, a different story than had been fostered by earthly-based observers for centuries. Far from being a planet carpeted with vegetation and intelligent life, which had supposedly created canals to deliver water from the north and the south poles to the water-starved middle, thus explaining the clearly marked geometric lines that crisscrossed the planet, per early observers, who also noted the annual cycle of darkening and lightning across the planet. Those human-based phantoms, those life forms, were replaced with the satellite's discovery of randomly placed impact and volcanic craters, deep planetary gashes, towering mountains, and hugely deep chasms that, as we heard, could easily swallow multiple Grand Canyons. The Martian probes revealed a neighboring planet that was cold, dry, with little atmosphere, and home to dramatic dust storms that raged planet-wide for days, for weeks, as the sun warmed the surface on the planet, creating winds and creating dust storms in, surprise of surprises, an annual cycle of time. Names of scientists from the far distant past to the more recent erupt on these pages, from the quiet and deeply serious, two such showmen as the late 20th century TV and print character Dr. Carl Sagan, with his billions and billions of stars. His captivating tour of the universe, first shown on PBS, that took us literally on personal journeys through the cosmos, and was eventually seen, we're told, by nearly half a billion people worldwide. All of it is a continuing reminder that science is done by men, by women, whose peculiar takes on their earthly world proved to be so important to their insights, right or wrong, about the universe outside of Earth. And so we come to this surprisingly quick development of a brand new science, a new science that formed in the last part of the 20th century. It's come to be known as exobiology, the study of life, or the possibilities of life, in worlds beyond Earth, and to the development of a parallel interest in extreme biology on Earth. Both are journeys into scientific endeavors that are covered with breathless fascination, including the achingly sad revelation that one of the best-known scientists of these new scientific fields gave his life to prove the legitimacy of exo and extreme biology as a scientific endeavors. In the end, that scientist's life was not lost in vain. It was soon enough discovered by equally curious colleagues that life on Earth can survive, even thrive, in seemingly ridiculous environments on Earth. Bringing our author to ask, once again, in answer to that siren call of life beyond our planet, could the discovery of life in extreme environments here on Earth, deep, deep in the oceans, high on Antarctic, Arctic, dry weather, could those be a harbinger of life off of Earth, perhaps Mars as well? Again and again and yet again, The power of human imagination has led scientists and lay people to suggest and even convince themselves that life on Mars was possible, even likely. More than 100 years after serious scientists discussed the likely signs of life on the red planet, the 1990s saw a meteorite, which came from the red planet, discovered in the wilds of Antarctica, and the science it was put through launched a United States president to hold a press conference suggesting that life off of Earth may just have been found. Those hopes only to be dashed, if not fully, once further scientific effort was put onto the promising original discoveries. Once again, the sirens of Mars had proven too strong. Our author hints at the existential wonder we humans have about life off of Earth, out among the stars, as if life elsewhere will somehow validate life here on Earth, and perhaps even help us to make sense of life here on Earth. That life on other planets may not be hospitable to us is rarely discussed by scientists and engineers who investigate the great wonders of space, as reported in this book, and that's something I've sometimes wondered over. But back to our book. Our author is a genius at weaving in anecdotes from her own youth, her own current life, into these pages, reflecting her youthful endeavors and the wondering minds of the scientists she portrays, giving the text a richly human touch that helps keep these pages moving as any good fictional story can, though, of course, this is truth, related stranger than any fiction. As I write and read this, yet another robotic rover is roaming the red planet's surface. And a helicopter is flying through the thin air of Mars. Wonders never cease. Will the sirens of Mars continue to poll humankind of the red planet and continue our search for life on, in, or perhaps under its red soil? Well, if history is our guide, then heck yes, the sirens will win. And if Johnson continues to be our guide for this quixotic journey, the story told will be well worth our time to read. Johnson ends her journey, her current journey, because it is a journey certainly to go on for long, long after this book has been published, by writing this. As much as Mars feels like a place we understand, a place like Earth, it is still the alien other. In 2010, the little robot roving around was named Opportunity. All those years ago, it seemed like such a marvel that the rover was still working. No one would have dared to believe it would have thousands more souls of science. The dust was building, the power dropping. It had been traversing the planet for 6 years and was already long past its 90-day expiration date. But then, a gust of wind rustled across and cleaned some of the fine particles off the solar panels. With the unexpected spike in electricity output, the team on Earth commanded the panoramic camera to take a series of pictures. The flickering images captured by the rover are unforgettable. There, on the ancient plain near the equator of Mars, against an ochre sky on a dusty day, the sun is setting. A white circle of light is drifting down over the dark desert. The terrain is bare, and the sky is still in the half-light of dusk. And on the horizon, with the dust having scattered all the red light away, the sunset glows an eerie, baffling, incandescent blue. The color makes no sense, she writes. It rattles the mind. It rips at the seams of the physical world. Scientifically, I understand it. The properties of the light, the microphysics of the system. There is no mystery to behold. And yet, the mystery, like many others in our universe, is profound. Nearly incomprehensible. That blue so recognizable yet so foreign, shining in a halo shining in a halo around our shared star, calling us like a siren. The Sirens of Mars. Searching for life on another world, Sarah Stewart Johnson is our guide. It's a great read. And with yet another rover traversing the deserts of that red planet above us, what a great read for now. It's available, The Sirens of Mars, at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.